Well, should I start?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm actually enjoying something I'm entering in the contest here in a couple weeks. It's called a Baltic Porter. I got the recipe from a northern brewer.
Okay.
Love it. So it's really not a commercial brew, but I also have some Hop Devil here too. So.
Oh, good choice.
What's that?
Good choice.
Hop Devil. You're breaking up in there a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I guess that will happen with Skype. I said it's a good choice. I'm a big fan of Hop Devil.
Love it.
I have just got a case in – actually, I don't have Hop Devil. I have a 60-minute IPA, another one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So
– a friend of mine made that exact same recipe, and it came out great. We
really
enjoyed it, too.
Baltic Porter.
Which one?
The Baltic Hop Devil? Porter.
Oh, Baltic Porter, yeah.
The homebrew you made.
Yeah, it's from Northern Brewer.
Yep.
Just a wonderful, wonderful blend.
I live about a mile and a quarter from Northern Brewer, so that's definitely my local homebrew store.
Oh, definitely, man. I bet you it has a big, does it have a big showroom, so to speak?
They have expanded their mail room. They have a facility now that's maybe about 10 miles from here that they do all of the mail order out of that building now. And the original store is now only the retail walk-in store. You know, buy off the shelf kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
That sounds great.
It's decent size, but, they're all hardworking guys, and I know they do national and international business, and I'm just glad to have them so close to me. I even can bike over there sometimes. I have a Three Floyds Alpha King going right now, one of my favorite IPAs that you can get fairly easily, I guess.
What's it called again?
Three Floyds Alpha King.
Three Floyds
is, I think, out of Indiana.
Yeah, we actually did we get Alpha King, Jeff? Did we ever try that one?
I've had Alpha King. We were able to get it here briefly, but normally you can't get it. We have a bunch of Three Floyds in the cellar from Monkey Toe sent it in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Bell's Two Hearted in the way that it's pretty hoppy, but definitely drinkable. I mean, Greg would like this one. It's not a Stone Ruination IPA or anything like that. I mean, those are nice to sample, but it is hard to drink a glass of those sometimes.
I should say.
I'm drinking the Ken and Abel from Two Brothers.
Oh.
I've never had it before. It's hopped up red rye ale.
Wow. That sounds delicious. I'm a big fan of rye. I mean, we only just, you know, discovered rye on the show, or really tasted rye the first time, at least I did, about 7 or 8 shows ago.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I really do like those red rye. Have Don, have you found anything interesting lately?
What I was gonna comment on your rye comment, and also just take a quick minute to plug homebrewing. I know Jeff, you brew, and sounds like I forget which other guy has made the Baltic Porter, but I made a rye IPA recently, and it's the recipe that goes around the internet pretty commonly by Denny Kahn.
Okay.
And I finally took a crack at it, and it really did come out great. And like Greg says, rye gives it a little bit of a different zip, a little bit of a tang, and that combined with all the hop additions in that beer, it makes it really great.
Yeah, just recently we retasted the Terrapin rye pale ale. It's an American pale ale with rye. That has a nice little refreshing zip to it. And I also just recently had that one of Heavyweight's very last brews, their slice of bread rye, where he put so much, what's the rye bread seed stuff called? I forget right now.
I don't really know.
The seeds they put in rye bread.
It's not caraway.
Caraway, that's it. He put so much caraway in it that it just tasted like a big loaf of rye bread. It was crazy. It was so malty. It was like as malty as you, mouthfeel-wise, it was like Doppelbach-ish. It was so much rye, caraway, and rye in it. It was just a crazy, crazy beer.
That's great.
Where's Terrapin from?
Athens, Georgia.
Okay, I don't think we have that around.
Yeah, we can't get it here. We had a listener send it to us, and that was a nice, refreshing beer. So definitely keep your eyes out if you're down south.
Keith, along with that.
I have a question for our listeners. It's a thing in the beer news that I've been hearing about a lot lately. A lot of buzz about it. I was wondering if you guys have heard anything about it or agree in the same. Lots of people are talking about making American IPAs, but with Abbey yeast. You guys heard about this?
No, I'm not sure what Abbey yeast is.
A Belgian Abbey type yeast.
Okay.
So you get
I didn't do anything.
Belgian style beer with a hoppy American thing. I know a couple of brewers have been talking about it, and a bunch of home brewers have done it recently.
So compared to a normal Abbey Ale, would that be a little bit more hoppy, are you saying?
Yeah, it would be considerably more American hops,
you know,
to
citrus
it.
Citrus American hops with the flowery bubblegum fruity thing you would get in an Abbey Ale or a double or something like that. It seems like a weird hybrid, a weird concoction, and I've heard a couple different
people. You add Belgian sugars to that?
You could. There was an email today. Well, you could, but most likely in the base recipe, not. Got an email tonight or today from one of our listeners in Michigan. He went to New Holland Brewing Company, and they took their IPA and brewed it with a Belgian yeast. And that was the most recent time, so I was just wondering if anyone else had heard about that.
No, but it sounds like a really interesting flavor combination.
Yeah, it certainly does.
I wonder how that would really go. Particularly since when you're used to having these Belgian beers, you're used to getting some sweetness from the sugars, along with all those the esters and phenols that come out of the yeast. And so you're not really used to having a very strong hoppiness there. In fact,
especially American hops, not at all.
I can't think of a very strong hoppy Belgian beer that I've really experienced. Maybe something from Unibrew might have something along those characteristics. But
I wonder if that would be kind of counterproductive, because the yeast, you definitely want to taste the Belgian yeast in any kind of a Belgian beer, and in a pale ale or a good American pale ale, you want to really experience the hop flavor. I wonder if those flavors would kind of fight each other a little bit.
Well, that's what I kind of thought. I had a situation, you might have heard me talking about it on our show or in the post show. I brewed a Belgian double, like Omegang, and it had a really, really long lag time. So I kind of panicked. I ordered a second pack of Abbey yeast. And by the time the yeast came in the mail, because the local homebrew store didn't have any, by the time the yeast came in the mail, the fermentation had kicked off and it was going strong. So now I had a pack of Abbey yeast I didn't know what to do with. And one of the thoughts I thought, should I do something crazy and like make an IPA with Belgian yeast? You know, I never heard anyone else talking about it before that. So, you know, maybe I could have been the pioneer. Who knows? But
the Jeff Bear recipe would be going around the internet.
But on Beer Advocate in the homebrew forums, they suggested I do a Belgian pale ale, kind of like a Fat Tire. And that beer turned out really good. So
I was actually going to bring up Fat Tire, because when you're talking about American pale ales with Belgian yeast, I mean, I don't know, that's not especially a hoppy beer, but it's a beer that a lot of people drink.
Yeah.
And it is made with the Belgian yeast, so people are somewhat exposed to that kind of a flavor on more of a common level.
Yeah, maybe that was that fried flavor you didn't like.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it all depends on which Fat Tire you get, because I had two within a week, and my first one was delicious. I could taste the Belgian character to it, and it was nice and caramel and everything. And then the one I brought home for Greg to try had tastes like fried fish or something. So,
too, when you're kids, you want to drink because it's the cool thing to do, because everyone tells you not to. Whereas culturally in Japan, it's like you don't do that because that's just something that only louses do or something like that. It's you can really screw up your entire life if you do that when you're a kid.
We could probably use more of that type of that approach, I think. I think it would lead to a lot more sensible drinking.
I think that the trick, though, is to not tell kids that alcohol will kill them and it's super dangerous, just to say, you know, to appreciate it in moderation. I mean, like in France, you know, they give their kids wine when they're 3 or 4 years old, just because so they don't get to the point where they got to have alcohol because they think it's something to run away from. It's
yeah, good
bad.
Point.
It's just that, you know, it's part of the culture there.
Does anyone here have kids?
I do.
Okay.
I have one.
I'm just curious. You know, in my opinion, when I have kids, I'm going to raise them with, you know, a healthy respect of alcohol. They can try it as they want. They can have, you know, some of a beer, maybe, you know, as they get into their mid-teens, they can have a whole beer in my presence. I want them to not think alcohol is, you know, for binging like I did when I was, you know, 17 years old. And maybe that won't work. I'm kind of curious because, you know, even if my dad gave me his crappy beer, I'd probably still want to go binge with my friends.
Well, no, I think
I'm just trying to think, you know, I wanted to see what, you know, some of your opinions were about raising your kids with alcohol.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that my father treated me in the sense that, you know, he let me have a sip of his beer every once in a while, even when I was as young as 10 or 11. And the first time I was able to have a full beer was at my bar mitzvah when I was 13.
Okay.
And he let me have one, you know, and have a whole beer and enjoy it. So I, you know, I got the taste for beer when I was a young kid. You know, I started to kind of enjoy it, but I never was given a lot.
Okay.
But I also, you know, kind of, I didn't really get drunk until I got to college.
Right. I mean, I guess everyone's still going to binge no matter how you raise
them. Yeah.
But right, I think repetitive right. binge behavior might be mitigated by, you know, raising your kids like they do in France or Germany, where, you know, yes, you can have some alcohol, you know, and you definitely, as a parent, want to moderate it. Any of you guys that have kids, I mean, what's your thoughts on the subject?
Well, that's sort of how. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, my intentions are pretty much exactly what you said. I just have a 3-month-old right now, so that's hopefully a little ways off still. But I've seen, too, where if it's just a everyday responsible part of your life, you have a beer with dinner, maybe you have one in the evening, you're not getting drunk in front of your kids, I don't see why you can't teach them that kind of responsible use. And also, I brew beer, so I think they can also see just how it's even more than just the drinking of it. It's just something that I just enjoy doing from the start to the finish. So
right,
that's how I'm going to try to do it.
Like, you can show them it's more of a craft rather than just a crazy thing to do. But it's
a historical part of you know, humanity. I mean, we've been drinking for some time now.
Absolutely.
I think one of the reasons people binge in college, I know at least I did, was to get on the same level as everyone else.
Right, right.
And that was like a peer pressure thing versus, you know, getting away from your parents and you're meeting all these new people. You have no idea what who the heck they are, where they're from. Everyone can get on the same level if you do a couple keg stands, you know? Keg stands
very
or
low level.
Beer bongs or, yeah, low level. But
yeah, the one situation I'm thinking of binging, you know, you mentioned beer bong. It was the night after my high school graduation, and we're up in a friend's backyard. His little brother, you know, they had a half pipe built, so we had a bonfire up by the half pipe, and we built this beer bong out of this one and a half inch tubing and this huge funnel. It held like 6 cans of beer. And when I ever talk about, you know, my one binging experience, you know, that's what comes into mind.
Yeah, I think that you're really, if you can teach also kids that beer is more than just Budweiser, as they grow up and kind of maybe even expose them to different flavors, it's not only going to help them, it's going to help craft brewing. And, you know, we're all about that too, you know, just exposing them to what's out there to really say, you know, this is not necessarily for just getting smashed on. You can also really enjoy this as a great, in a sense, as a great food, as a great luxury of life.
Right. Yeah. My daughter is 4, and she's already been on 3 brewery tours, I think. She likes seeing, like, the big kettles, and mm-hmm. she likes, you know, hearing about the process and stuff like that. So it's not, you know what I mean? Like I said, it's not, oh, daddy's drunk again or, you know, anything like that. It's like, you know, there's a lot that goes into this.
Yeah, and you know,
he's not getting smashed and abusing the tour guide or anything like that.
Right, right. So
funny you say that. My 3-month-old has been on a brewery tour already also.
You guys are legends.
We actually have a new brewery opening up in the Twin Cities area called Surly Brewing. And what they're going to try to do is be a little bit, I don't want to say like Stone or like Dogfish Head, but they'd want to be not just doing your mainstream beers. And they have a pretty hoppy American brown ale that's on all of the local, I mean, it's like 50-plus bars in the area. They also have more of an IPA, and then they also have a Saison style, like kind of an American Saison style. So they have 3 fairly unique beers, and they're getting very well received in the area. They're not going to be bottling for quite a while, but they do have that as a goal. So maybe you'll see Surly in a state near you someday. But
it's a good name.
They're doing pretty well.
Surly only looks like for one person. Surly.
Surely.
I'm going to see if this makes a little noise. I'm going to pop this rye IPA here.
All right, I got some.
Oh, wow.
Did I do anything? Ooh. There you go.
We heard it.
Simply, you know, the American lager beers.
And I hear Don's baby in the background. There it is. Don just messaged on the Skype chat, which some of you are not. I think I got around to inviting everyone. There's not much going on, so don't feel left out. But Don said, shoot, his baby's waking up, and we can hear him in the background. So.
You need to give that baby a beer. That'll knock him out.
The youngest beer geek.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is Don. I'm back temporarily, I think, and I've got a Summit Hefeweizen, and you guys have tried some Summits. I know you've had a couple of skunked ones.
Yeah, yeah. We did the Hefe. We thought it was pretty forgettable. There was nothing really outstanding about it when we had it.
Yeah, I don't know how you make a... That's a good point. I mean, how do you make an outstanding Hefeweizen? And I think it's... I think it's totally drinkable. I think it's you know, fair enough. I mean, yeah, I don't know if it's great, but it's all right.
I mean, for
it's
a good...
I live just I don't know how many miles from the brewery, so I have to give them some benefit of the doubt, I guess.
Sure. I mean,
yeah,
for
support your local brewery, yeah.
For a good hefe, I want a lot of banana and clove in it. And that one was...
This one's more about the yeast, I think, than those types of aromas or flavors.
Okay. I mean, with a Hefeweizen, typically the yeast is what gives those flavors. But
well, but the actual yeast that's in the suspension.
Oh, right.
I taste the yeast more, I guess you could put it that way.
Sure.
Than those other types of flavors.
No, we had a fresh IPA that wasn't skunked. We had the skunked one a while back that we had to pour out that was so bad. And we had a Summit IPA that recently that was pretty good. We liked it.
I was surprised that you guys rated that as high as you did, because if I think of just general IPAs that I have from different American breweries, I don't care for the Summit IPA that much.
Well,
but it just maybe it was just kind of the best one of the ones that you had.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind we're always rating per show, not per what we've had.
Yeah,
it makes us a little bit different. You know, some other shows that rate, I know one particular that doesn't produce much anymore. They'd always give a thumbs up and certain degrees of thumbs up or thumbs down. So they're rating overall, where we're just rating per show. So, well,
I have a question for you guys, if you haven't talked about it much, I'm wondering. I know Greg's kind of distaste of Stone and their approach to brewing is semi-well documented on Craft Beer Radio, I'd say. But,
just a little bit,
I'm wondering about what do other people think of just imperializing styles in general. You have Imperial Pale Ale, you have Imperial Pilsner, of course you have Imperial IPAs. Everything is just, you know, so big, and it's... I just think that, for me, I don't mind tasting these things, but if I go to a beer festival and I get a 2 or a 4 ounce sample, I'm good. And I don't need, I could not even drink a bottle of this stuff a lot of the times. And I'm just wondering, you know, what do the rest of you guys think about imperial everything?
It's a really good question. I think since we're getting late, we're going to end on this question, but it's a good question to ask the...
Greg wants to go home.
It's not that I want to go home, but, you know, it is.
Greg has to go home.
Yeah. But it is a good question. What do you guys think of you know, imperializing styles, whether it's, you know, sticking a whole bunch of hops in an imperial pale ale?
I saw a great analogy on an article a couple months ago where it equated the craft beer industry as to the late 60s, early 70s of rock and roll, very experimental. We got the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper. We got Zeppelin trying some crazy stuff. And I think that they also equated the thing where the music industry found a good solid blues riff. You know, blues is solid, it's timeless type thing, where the crazy Beatles and the Sgt. Pepper's kind of is a one, you know, a short time lived thing. And I think, you know, we'll start appreciating the subtleties of beer more as the palates mature.
I don't know, because each generation, if you go back to the music analogy, has its break from the norm. You have the new wave, you have punk, you have grunge. You have these spikes of different, you know, popularity that will hit. I guess the most recent, you know, we had boy bands for a while.
Lance
Bass is gay, by the way, everybody. And we...
All those horrible, horrible American Idol ripoffs on summer repeat season right now.
So, you know, I don't know whether you can necessarily equate them, because the experimentalization in music especially has always been big.
Okay. So
it seems to me that so many beer drinkers craft beer drinkers, let's say, seem to think that bigger is better, and almost all the time. I don't know if I think that's true. It's fun to taste and sample, but it's not really the kind of beer that you just want to drink.
Actually, I have a different approach. I taste these imperial versions of the styles that have been around for a while, and like you say, you know, a couple of ounces does me. I opened up the Golden Shower, and yeah, I can't drink one of those bottles by myself.
It is a big
crazy
bottle.
What I've been concentrating on with my own brewing at home is trying to make fully flavored beers, which are lower alcohol, things that I can drink, because you know, during the summer it's hot, and the last thing I want to do is come home and drink a 9% ABV beer that's, you know, gives me, it has this sweet aftertaste. And so I think, and I've talked to some of my friends here who brew, and a lot of us do brew in the summer, these 3-4% ABV versions of you know, milds and bitters, and like I've got a couple of carboys of saison right now, which are down below 4% ABV, and the trick there is to get a lot of flavor into the glass, but not a lot of alcohol. And actually, I think it's too bad James is gone, because I think he interviewed a guy recently, I forget his name now, down at the NHC about making session beers. And I thought that was, there could have been a lot more could have been said about that. But I think, I hope there is an awareness in the craft beer world that a lot of us sometimes are thirsty, and we want to drink an imperial pint, not an imperial porter or an imperial double IPA or whatever. So.
Yeah, I mean, again, offering an Antipodean perspective here, one of the things I feel about the number of imperial versions that you guys seem to have, the number one thing I feel about that is jealousy. We just can't get them here. The one I have tried is the Morimoto, is it, from Rogue?
Yeah.
And that was incredible. I'd kill for some more of that, you know. And if they're all like that, or all like that in terms of quality, then, yeah, I agree with what's been said about the amount that you want. But, yeah, I mean, they just have so much more flavor than anything else that I've tried.
Yeah,
now, I wouldn't want – I'd hate it if that was all there was to drink, but, you know, they are amazing beers.
I guess oversaturation really is the big problem. You don't want to have too much of them. You want them to be available, but you don't want everyone to get so super excited, but that's the only thing that they drink, or the only thing they try.
Yeah, if I was having a Stout's Imperial IPA tonight, that would have been the only beer I was drinking.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's almost become its own kind of odd act of rebellion to go for the session beers, or if you're brewing, or maybe even if you're buying commercial, you go against the grain. You say, well, I just want to get this British bitter, or I want to make this low-gravity wheat beer or something. And that's kind of become the rebellious thing to do, instead of making the really high-gravity stuff.
East End Brewing Company here in Pittsburgh, he's a production-only brewery, so he has to get label approval for anything he puts out. So what he did was he got a kind of a generic label approval, and he does the East End Brewing session beers, and they're all a one-off session beer under 4% alcohol. His second to newest one was a Southern English Nut Brown, and I poured two beer festivals where he had this beer, and people loved it.
Uh-huh.
Lots of flavor in this low alcohol beer, about 3.6% or so, I think it was, and people are going nuts about it. So yeah, there is a market for these flavorful small beers,
and I like to see that expand, and we can only hope it does, I guess.
We do have a great amount of choice in the U.S., and our New Zealand brother, I mean...